You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I'm Anthony Kashevitz, and this is very special. Scott Merkin joining us on his way to Adam LaRoche's high school, where the complex is being named after Adam LaRoche and his... Wait, explain this again to me, Mark. The complex is named after LaRoche.
No, it's a new field that they've developed there that's... It's for the high school, which plays all the fun for the field. And it's the complex is named after the field is going to be named after his uncle, Dave, who coached him, and his cousin is the current coach of the baseball team. And that Adam said that's one of his closest friends in the world. So there you go. It's quite an event for him. I talked to him at spring training about it, and he was a little nervous about it being ready, but it sounds like it's ready to go. And I think they're even playing on the high school playing a game today on the new field.
Well, Adam LaRoche is a great ambassador for MLB and obviously has been very good to his alma mater. But, Merk, I do have to question his parenting skills after everybody saw that video of Bo Jackson having to explain his career to young Drake LaRoche. I guess you can't cover all the bases as a parent, but it was certainly fun to hear Bo Jackson's own Wikipedia page, I guess, voiced by himself.
Yeah, I think in fairness to Drake, he's, 12 or 13, so
yeah.
He seemed to know about the baseball days, he just didn't know about the football days. But that was,
right.
As they say, that went viral pretty quick. That was pretty fun.
That's it.
I'll tell you what, he's a great kid, though. He was with his dad for a good part of spring training, and he's got a locker in the new complex. That, they redid the home locker room at U.S. Cellular, so he'll be there, I imagine, most of the summer. And really fit in well, just a real respectful, well-mannered, kid who really seems to enjoy baseball and, helps out where he can. So, I guess Adam, that was one of the selling points for him in coming to Chicago is that he knew Robin from when he did the same thing when his dad Dave, who everyone remembers is a left-handed pitcher, I think was a brief time as a closer, at least a reliever for the Cubs, and was the bullpen coach for the White Sox when Robin played there. And that's where kind of Adam and Andy formed a bond with Robin when Robin was, a player kind of looking out for the kids back then.
All right, Mark, enough of these rosy, fuzzy topics. Let's get down to the meat of the matter. Let's panic a little bit. Jeff Samardzija gave up 9 home runs in 21 innings in spring training, follows that up on opening day with a clunker against the Royals, 5 walks, gave up another home run. Is there much concern about Samardzija? What have you seen from him, and what do you sense from them?
Well, based on the reaction I've seen on Twitter and just heard from my family in Chicago, it sounds like baseball became a one-game sudden-death season for the Cubs and White Sox after that opener. But, no, I don't think there's any panic or any trends or anything else you can take from, one game in spring training. And, like you said, he had three walks yesterday. They had, four. They had 5 as a team, 4 scored. And that's something that he has talked about even in spring training when he was giving up the home runs. And as long as he's doing it with spaces empty, that it's not as big a thing because he's going to challenge hitters. So that seemed to bother him yesterday. And, he hit 2 guys, too, which seemed to bother the Royals a little bit. But
yeah.
I think it's not a trend. I mean, it's kind of hard to take anything out of it. We were discussing this yesterday. Paul Konerko always had, a kind of a kill date when you kind of looked at the season and said, okay, now you can tell who's in or who's not. I think it was 100 games. But, yeah, one game certainly was not it. I don't remember exactly what Konerko had on it, but one game's not it. So he'll be fine. And, Chris Sale is supposedly coming back this Sunday to pitch, and that's going to set the rotation up. So, yeah, it was a bad game against a really good team, the defending American League champions, who had a really good pitcher going. So, yeah, I don't think there's any even remote reason to panic unless you just really like panic.
I love to panic, but I'm in the minority. I'm probably in the majority, actually. But
the ball flies in Arizona.
So you can kind of shrug off the home runs in Arizona. The ball does not fly as well in Kauffman Stadium, but again, one start, and we'll see how the Shark recovers. He has a lot of incentive to recover, not just for the team, but for himself. So,
sure.
And you mentioned Chris Sale. That thing went about as good as the White Sox could hope. I know April 12th was kind of the target date for a while, and it sounds like that's going to happen.
Yeah, the worst case scenario, you know, the day it happened became the best case scenario after it happened. I don't think there were many of us, or maybe even some of the White Sox, who thought the 12th was possible. Just the next day, they needed a number, you know, they needed a full five-starter complement. It was April 21st. And I think we all kind of looked at that and said, well, you know, he broke a bone in his foot. That makes the best sense that it's going to take a little bit to get back. But to his credit, to Herm Schneider's credit, you know, the White Sox head athletic trainer, they worked hard and they got back, and he's supposedly going to be with the, you know, team come Wednesday and ready to go throw a bullpen, according to John Cooper, on Friday and be ready to go on Sunday. Now, if there was forecast for rain in the second game of the series against the Royals, so, you know, I'm not sure how that would mess with things if it did, but I can't imagine that they would move Chris back to Cleveland, who's hit him pretty well over his career, A, and B, give up a home date. You know, I think Chris is pitching April 12th, assuming there's no minor setbacks between, you know, before April 12th, and then they'll arrange the rotation around it if they need to.
Shifting gears, talk a little about the lineup, Mark. I guess it's the one part of the lineup you look at and feel a little nervous about is the bottom third of the order. So coming off a big spring, how big is Micah Johnson for this club, batting in the nine hole? And we know Robin Ventura wants him to kind of turn that lineup over a little bit with his hit tool and speed tool.
Well, I think one thing Rick Hahn did, one of the many things he did with this offseason, you know, kind of reshaping speed-up process, was made them more athletic and gave them more, you know, speed options. Last year, Adam Eaton was pretty much it, that you could hit number one. Maybe, you know, I think Gordon Beckham hit there once or twice against a lefty. I think Alexi might have been up there once against a lefty. But now you have some options. You have a guy like Eaton. You have a guy like J.B. Shock. And then you have Micah. And Micah, you know, can fly. I mean, just watching him go from first to third or on a single or first to home on a double, you get how much raw speed he has. And then also he's got that ability that, you know, you like to see out of a leadoff guy who he can, you know, extend starting pitchers. That's what the 05 team did so well is, you know, they hit a lot of home runs, but they weren't a great offensive team, but they made, you know, they had the pitching that could make a couple runs hold up, and they could knock those starters out early by, you know, extending at bats, going, you know, taking a four-pitch bet and making it seven or eight, and getting to the middle relief, which is what every team in baseball wants to do. And, you know, Micah showed that yesterday. His first career at bat was a 13-pitch at bat against Jordano Ventura, arguably one of the better young pitchers in the game. And he fouls off seven straight fastballs between 95 and 97 miles an hour before he didn't line out the center, but still an excellent bat. So, yeah, him playing well and him kind of finding a rhythm defensively is big for that whole lineup. Because, like you said, it gives you that second leadoff hitter. It gives Eaton a chance for, you know, some RBI opportunities also. But it just kind of balances it out a little bit. I think he could be, you know, everyone talks about Carlos Rodon as, you know, a mid-season Cobb, and people have, you know, the prognosticators have picked him as number one, picked him as American League Rookie of the Year. But I think Micah could be in that race too, because Micah, you know, a dynamic offensive force, just has to kind of balance the defense a little bit.
Yeah, you have to like the way he asserted himself this spring. There's this hodgepodge situation at second base, and he really just seized it. It was a pretty easy decision for the White Sox in the end.
Carlos Sanchez had a great camp, and he actually broke camp with the team. I would imagine he's going to go to Charlotte when Chris Sale is activated, because they're not going to go with a six-man bullpen. But, yeah, I mean, one thing they have that they haven't had in years, there were two or three years I can remember there where, you know, aside from Gortz, there weren't many middle infield prospects there. And now, you know, you have quite a few. They're real high on Tyler Saladino, who's playing in Charlotte, shortstop. He's a, you know, good utility guy too, and Carlos Sanchez. So that there's some options there now for the team.
As you said, Mark, it can be 100 games before you know much about a team. It could be 162 games before you really know what a team is. But 25 of their first 28 overall are against Central clubs. So I guess we'll have a little bit of an inkling, you know, where the White Sox stand relative to their division peers, at least that first run through.
Yeah, I think one of the key things in that is probably just not to get buried there. You know, I don't think they have to go through those first 28 and be 21-7 or 19-9. I think as long as they're not the reverse of that, you know, 7-21 or 9-19, that they should be fine. This is a team that, you know, a lot of new players. I think 11 new guys on the active roster. So it may be a team that in May is better than they are in April as they kind of, as I've used the word before, find their rhythm together. Yeah, I remember in 2012, Robin's first year, I think they were 17-23 through 40 games and didn't look very good. They beat Anaheim behind Gavin Floyd like 6-1, and all of a sudden things turned around. They ended up being in first place for 117 days that year. Now it didn't finish like they wanted, but that's why it's, you know, even through a month, you're not completely sure what you have unless you get, you know, get out to a great start or get out to a horrible start. But it does enhance it a little bit playing so many teams in the division because, you know, it's a tough division. We talked about this before, Anthony, on the podcast. We're, you know, 85, 86 wins may win this division. So every win counts a little extra, I think, against division opponents.
A little extra. See what you did there, Merck.
No pun intended.
Yeah, let's get the name right of your own podcast, by the way. Come on.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
All right. I want to thank Merck for joining us from the road, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.